every website in the world is made for advertising?
That's a bloody interesting question. Have to give it some serious thought. Something like 49% of money doesn't even reach a publisher.
It's just we're used to it. You know, it's kind of a crutch that we all lean on because we've had it for 20 odd years.
Yeah, the boy who cried wolf.
Hi everybody, welcome back to another episode of Lab Talks. I am Ben Putley, the CEO and co-founder at Alchemy. It's my pleasure today to be joined by Matt Wilkes. Matt, please could you introduce yourself to everyone listening along?
Yeah, cheers Ben, thanks for having me on. So I'm Matt Wilkie, I head up the digital partnerships and run the programmatic team for Media Plus UK, previously Total Media UK. So my background is that you can tell from my accents, I've worked most of my career in South Africa. I've been across the Omnicom stacks, the WPP Group M side of life. For the past 3 years, I've been indie. And it's been quite interesting. Grass is greener sometimes, grass is not greener sometimes. But you do find that that sort of things, the issues that I was always dealing with from a big network side are not much, if at all, different coming to the indie side of life. So it's as much as there's differences, there's a lot of similarities as well. And I guess that goes according to, you know, the technology that we're all using. It's the same no matter what side of the pond you're sitting on, right?
Yeah.
Clients are also same sort of, you know, they want the same results whether they're paying the big bucks or they're paying the little bucks. So we're all pretty much switched on from that regard.
Did that surprise you when you moved over from kind of the big media agencies to the independent? Were you expecting it to be different, or is that?
Well, I tell you what did surprise me is what I was expecting was that possibility that some of the larger tech players were not going to be as interested or as pushy or as wanty to talk to indie. You know, because we don't have we punch above our weight, certainly, but what I mean is we don't have like a Unilever, you know, and we don't have a P&G. So I thought there might be a little bit more sort of a bit of a looser attitude from them towards working with us. If anything, quite pleasantly surprised at how how interested and how sort of much support does come. I say that loosely as well, depending on the day, depending on the rep you get, it could be anything, but not major differences in the terms of service levels that I was expecting, which has been quite surprising. And then on the other hand, working with publishers and some of the more, I guess one of the things that has been interesting is the more niche, the more sort of like intricate sort of players, people who have a lot more sort of beta testing and that type of thing. I think that they see indies as a great place to sort of get something trial tested, played around with, because obviously we don't have the red tape and the bureaucracy that some of the bigger networks might have. So they can almost use us as a proof point and a proving ground. That does mean though that our lives, we do have to be very careful about what we are testing and trialing, because at the end of the day, it comes down to, you know, we want to get best results for client.
Certainly, yeah. So,
being a beta test is great, but at the same time, you also have to be quite firm on, well, we're not just going to be the sort of the playground for everyone to test and learn and then take everything off to the bigger player, bigger fish. So, yeah.
It's a delicate balance. Is an interesting place to be. And I think that I'll use it to take to the first point I really want to talk about is that in that beta testing, in working with publishers, has that allowed you to skirt around some of the issues we see with programmatic today, or has it allowed you, or have you kind of like more resolutely run into them because of you're pushing the limits of what's possible with programmatic advertising, or am I completely?
I guess it's a bit of yes and no. Something that I do think we do kind of experience is a little bit of testing fatigue, if that's the right terminology for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to be so careful that we're not getting stuck in this sort of test and learn loop an echo chamber where, well, we've got to test that because it sounds fantastic. We've got to test that now because it sounds fantastic. We've got to be quite strict on ourselves as well of saying, well, actually, we know that that's going to work. We know that that's not going to work. So, but you do get caught up in the excitement of it. I think, one of the things that has been quite interesting for us is that we've obviously been able to take some ideas and run with them a lot quicker. So, you know, we've started piloting things like curation and AI combinations. So basically, you know, marketplaces that are layered with AI-based forecasting and creative scoring tools, etc. And the thing is, the early signs for those things, they show that they drive strong attention and better performance. I'll get into attention in a second. But what we don't want to run into the risk of doing is trialing and testing so many, I mean, especially AI at the moment, so many different tools and things to try have come out. But I mean, we've got to keep in mind that we've only got so many hands on deck as well. And well, fragmentation in programmatic alone is already exhausting teams. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be quite careful about how we're doing that. So, you know, we're seeing very good planners spend too much time reconciling their reports or troubleshooting discrepancies because of too much testing and trialing. So what we prefer to sort of take as an approach of actually focusing on the effectiveness of what we're doing and trialing, to sort of alleviate, as I said, that testing fatigue. So a lot of research, case studies, and proof points need to sort of touch base before they run, to be quite frank.
I've got a question for you on the use of automation. And I hear this a lot where AI and automation is being used between kind of like in the exchange, you know, like to target ads better and to find better ad inventory and so on and so forth. And then I heard you saying that to put at the end of that, it's like this, that you test too much. There's a lot of kind of associated work that comes along with that. And my question to you is, do you think there is like, there's only so many marginal gains that you can make as far as like the targeting of ads is concerned, given the limitations of formats, channels, the actual accuracy of the data that you're getting from the buying of ads online? Do you think you're better off like applying the automation to the bits around the edges, which create the drag? Because it may well be that you're right in that like testing a lot does continue to provide the best results, but it creates a ton of work on the outside. Like, are you better spent optimizing this bit rather than this bit, I guess, is the question.
Well, perhaps jumping ahead a little bit, I do think that what we're going to see, particularly in the UK over the next 3 to 5 years, right, is that middleman, that sort of middle person role that doesn't add value from a tech provider's point of view is going to, you know, they're going to have to really show how they're adding performance to things. Or they're just going to have to, we're going to get rid of them because they're just filling a seat in the tech stack at the moment.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's where, you know, decentralization starts to come into things as well. Mm-hmm. So taking yourselves.
Now you're talking my language.
I mean, it's refreshing that you're not asking anyone to sort of rebuild or rework the wheel. You know, you want to make smarter decisions. Using, you know, inventory that's and how it's priced from that point of view. So, you know, I may have gone off on a little bit of a tangent here or a little bit of off topic, but I think long story short, we don't know what's going to happen with things like AI from an agent point of view. We're already seeing planners and the likes of those, you know, their job's not disappearing, but evolving into new sort of things.
100%,
And I think that's where what's going to be super interesting for the buyers. So, you know, I've already mentioned that we're already piloting a few different things. But I think what we need, or what the industry sort of needs, are some pretty clear frameworks. So what is the purpose of this? What is the metric that actually matters in this? And that's, I mean, it's a difficult sometimes conversation with clients at the moment.
Yeah.
What does success or failure mean to a campaign, or to what does success or failure mean for a tech partnership or a tech stack? There's a whole lot to that. So again, sorry if I went a little bit of a tangent there, but I think I started getting quite excited about what you were bringing up.
That's the approach that we've taken, right? Like a big efficiency guy. I do the same things every day. I don't enjoy wasting a whole lot of time, and that's really the approach we've taken at Alchemy, is that there is a lot of wastage that takes place. There's a lot of people that exist because they always have existed. And I don't think that needs to be true forever. One of the very basic premise of a blockchain is that there's transactions that are transparent and they're immutable. That to me, still, that basic premise is quite transformational. Well, very transformational for programmatic advertising, which doesn't have those things. So I think just being able to, as you kind of say, provide, here's what happened, we charge a very nominal fee to allow that to take place and really allow you to make decisions about your business and the buying that you're doing for your clients that you buy on behalf of, based off of all the information, so you don't fall into confirmation bias, and really just making the pipes more efficient, okay, let's make it versus the money moving more effectively. Right?
Yeah, the echo chamber. Every conference you go to, you hear the same speakers saying the same thing over and over, and they're posting the same thing on LinkedIn all the time. So you do get it. You do sort of get stuck in that. And I used to call them the blog readers. I'm aging a little bit, but let's talk programmatic 2013, 2014, sort of not quite the beginning days, but we're just getting into it. Things are coming out of the Wild West. And used to have those clients who I said they were always reading sort of the Ad Exchange blogs and bits and pieces like that. And you'd have a meeting with them once a week, and they'd raise a point, and you'd be like, oh, I know that so-and-so has just been talking about that. And you're like, but there's never sort of that deeper understanding about it. So, okay, interesting. You mentioned the blockchains, and I think blockchain back transparency, the platforms are incredibly promising. Especially when it comes to, you were alluding to ad fraud and where is the spend going and all the bits and pieces there a minute ago. Yeah. I mean, was it the ISBA did a sort of a transparency study not that long ago, and I think the wake-up call for everyone was something like 49% of money that gets put in doesn't even reach a publisher. So I mean, that's one in £6 sort of just disappears. It's quite scary. So going back to the blockchain thing, I think those transparency platforms are super interesting and promising for understanding where the money goes. But they haven't sort of hit that critical mass point yet. I think just because of the sort of, I'll say, the crypto bro sort of bits and pieces and blockchain being associated with that, it might have put some, it's unfortunate. They've sort of been put in the same box as stuff that's not that great sometimes. So
without a doubt,
I think most and the other problem is most of the sort of UK media teams, and this is talking to peers and colleagues at other agencies, indie network, in fact even publishers and so on, we're not actually equipped to act on that level of detail that blockchain platforms are wanting. I think the reporting is ahead of the governance, if that makes sense. So if you look into an agency like ours, for example, we're juggling the DSPs, we're juggling SSPs, curation platforms, ID graphs, clean rooms. And then on top of that, if you take somebody who was doing programmatic buying and sort of planning and trading just 8 years ago, so an account manager back then, they were just really focused on display, maybe a little bit of video, and audio was just starting to sort of edge its way in. But now you've got the same size programmatic team. You've got account managers who are sort of 24, 25, and they're having to worry about CTV, out of home, audio, TV, digital display, sometimes even social, and all the CDPs and that's this sort of exhaustion point that's reaching onto them. So it's interesting. I think that's something for somebody who comes in with a super blockchain platform is to take a leaf out of perhaps, and I won't say names, but some of the brand safety platforms out there who are really leaning into actually just let us do the managed service part. You've hired us as, you know, it's like hiring an electrician to come over to your house. You know what lights you want, you know where you want them, and you know how you would like the switch sort of positioned.
Yeah.
And you might know what you're doing, but chances are you're gonna, if you're anything like me and a few people who've told the story before, I have done this. If you're anything like me, you're probably going to end up shocking yourself and flying across the room. So sometimes it's better to actually, always better to bring in the experts who know their thing or know their platform and sort of lean into them a little bit harder. I think with the consolidation that's happening with some of the bigger networks as well, there's a lot of focus on the fact that they're going to be sending business to their overseas teams, sort of offshoring. But I wouldn't be surprised, or it would make more sense to me to sort of lean into and maybe leverage partnerships a bit better with the tech platforms and stuff, and sort of say to them, well, self-serve is great and all, but maybe we need to start focusing on the expertise of what can or should be done internally versus just bringing it all in. And I think this is where I've got to say, as senior leaders, we're sometimes guilty of it, because as I said at the beginning of this, something new comes along and sounds really interesting, and you go, that's a solution to something I've been trying to fix for 10 years of my career. But you've got to bear in mind that you've got that 10, 15 years experience. You can't just sort of bring it in, have one lunch and learn for your team, and then say, right, there you are, guys. You've all met sort of Billy Blogs from the whatever made up new name is going out there today. Off you go, set it up, run it for all our clients.
Let me know how it goes. Yeah.
And then at the end of the month, sort of drag them all in and say, oh, client told me that PCA didn't go down too well. Why? What did you do wrong? It's not fair. And then on top of that, actually, we've also got to bear in mind that, yes, clients, I think we sometimes sit here thinking, well, all client does every day is just look at numbers. Well, they probably do. And that's because they are focused into and onto their brand. They aren't chopping and changing all over the place. And we've got to bear in mind that they don't know who Alchemy is. They don't know who Double Verify is. They don't know who DV360, which used to be DVM, which used to be that. We're in this every day, all day, right? We've got to make sure that we're also being kind enough to sort of explain to them what we're doing with their money. As much as that pains me to say it, because I mean, I think often clients might forget that they've hired an agency because they trust the agency, as going back to that electrician thing I used earlier, as your experts. But that being said, we could take the bedside manners of some of the doctors and great surgeons that are out there and just sort of explain a little bit better and more anecdotal, or maybe more in prose, what we're actually doing. Instead of trying to over complicate or over intelligent stuff. Anyway, sorry, went off on a bit of a rant there, didn't I?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's something that I have, like, it's almost instinctive for me to, having like come from blockchain and then kind of adding ad tech to it, it's almost instinctual to me at this point to like simplify what I'm talking about as much as I physically can, because you can, the rabbit holes that you can go down just on, like, let me take like cross-chain swaps, for example. So like moving one token from one chain, let's say Ethereum to Solana or Sui, like the intricacies and the nuances and the risks and the opportunities and the pitfalls of that, I could talk to you about for five or 6 hours. You might fall asleep, but I would have a good time. So I think just like taking that and then like distilling it even lower is just, I think, it's why I'd say, like, really what we are in the game of is just like providing more efficiencies for your dollars, whether that's you trying to earn dollars as a publisher selling ads on the exchange or an agency like yourselves trying to buy media with those dollars, you should get the most you possibly can from that. And a blockchain provides a really nice solution, just as I was saying at the top of the call, in terms of just like, okay, you can see what happened. But then the coolest thing about, well, at least the best product market fit of any token or whatever it is a stable coin, right? It's just like composable, programmable money that you can use smart contracts to make it do things that are useful to you as someone that is handling dollars, right? Particularly when you look at the impact that agents will have in the future. Like, there's no way, in my opinion, the HSBC will allow your agent to interact with their back end. There's no chance. But I could right now create a smart contract that allowed me to send dollars to five publishers every month based off of the revenue that they've earned once we've had that verified on chain, you know, and that automates a whole part of the ad buying process. Like, efficiency isn't just we've lowered fees. Efficiency is like, how do we look at everything that goes along with ad buying? Because if that's all becomes more efficient, everything
you works better. You're really talking value over volume.
Exactly.
So quality over quantity, if that's, you know, the QQ that everyone always uses. Absolutely. So, but that does, I mean, that then brings me to, you know, something else that's quite interesting. I found that from a UK point of view, or media in general globally, I find that perhaps the UK market is leading the charge in things like attention metrics.
Yeah.
It could be that, you know, UK market comes very strongly out of telly buying and billboarding, but mainly I think it's the TV sort of thing.
I think that's like our best export. I think there's like British TV shows are used more globally than any other country's TV formats or something nuts. I saw an article. It's like we create all the really good trashy reality TV and everyone just copies us.
I mean, Scottish kid being brought up in South Africa, and I grew up watching Monty Python and Dad's Army. you know,
good choice.
But what I sort of, I mean, it'll be interesting to hear from your point of view then, now going about, you know, talking about crypto and blockchains and tokens, etc. But do we see attention metrics sort of maturing into its own currency and influencing our buying decisions, you know, the creation of formats around that? It would be interesting to consider that. And then also, so when I, what I'm trying to say is sort of, I think the CPM might need to either die a graceful death, or you know, it needs to be worked into a back end of something. It's got to be there to, because we have to pay publishers and all the rest. But you know, with the rise of things like MFA sites that continue to sort of drain on things, an argument that I've interestingly had is, well, actually really define MFA. An MFA to somebody might be really not somebody. I mean, look, obviously there are some blatant made for advertising websites out there, but then there are others where it's just super ad saturation, or you know, maybe it's good content, but they also have just one too many ads. And how does that?
Attention,
you know what I mean?
Made for advertising, I always argue about this, because like, no one's writing content for free by and large, you know, like if you want to be, take it to its like definition, like every website in the world is made for advertising. Yeah. You're right. There's some at the edges, which are just a joke, that are clearly just trying to farm clicks and CPMs. But like fundamentally, like people aren't writing websites at a large scale for the love of the game, you know, like, they want to make a bit of cash off the back of it. And so like, therefore, by definition, is it not made for advertising? That is probably a bit of a facetious way to answer that question, but because there's certainly sites that's like 10 celebrities that stepped over a puddle that's hidden ironically behind like a million ads, you know, like you don't want to be buying that.
There are people that, I mean, they get the those get clicks, they do get eyeballs, so it's obvious that they've made that content but is that sort of content not necessary to perhaps pay the journalists who are writing the more deeper stuff? So
yeah,
I mean, Yeah, I know there's an argument, but what I think the thing is, though, is the open web is still something like 50% of our programmatic display buying in the UK. Mm-hmm. And that's where we know where the most of the waste lives. So, I mean, how do we fix that or continue to lose credibility? Because programmatic, the method, the execution, and when you're talking proper programmatic, it is the execution. It's not, people still get confused that it's a channel or whatever, but it's not going anywhere. It's gonna, in my opinion, actually get even more sort of sped up now with the things of AI agents and LLMs and all the rest. But if we continue sort of like leading ourselves down the lines of platforms that aren't centralized and, not allowing ourselves to become decentralized, not looking into things like blockchain, are we just risking that, end of the day, we're going to have very upset people and more reports coming from the ISBA and, things from The Guardian that come out and sort of, absolutely talk about ad fraud and its wastage and how it's cluttered and commoditized. We need to start leaning into things a bit better, I feel.
I agree. I think it's oftentimes these things aren't bugs and they're more features. I think perhaps the fees support a very healthy ad tech market, So depending on where you come at it from, fees are a good thing. It's not good for the people that are creating the value. So people creating content or advertisers looking to access those eyeballs that are viewing that content, the people that are adding the value, and then often the people that go on the internet, they're just forgotten. We just get free content, but that trade-off, there's a lot of free content now. So I don't know if there's the value exchange, but
arguably, is it too much content?
Yeah, I think if you and I started watching YouTube, we'd never finish it. Yeah, TV, we'd be on series 25 million, and we'd still be I can't watch another YouTube video.
Yeah, I was going to say. So, what about real time verifications? Talking about, watching Horseshoe changing and stuff like that. is it brand safe for a brand? But clearly, you've got two guys here. We definitely fit in certain target market segments, etc. Is that brand not desirable, is it brand desirability, brand unsuitable, brand not safe for us to be served an ad if we're watching, a guy
just getting their shoes changed,
a farrier?
Trying to sell me a hammer. DeWalt, would be good, for that.
But I think what about real-time verification is what I'm sort of leaning into here. So the verification of value, being able to tell whether a campaign is sort of working well, driving the right sort of attention and detail. It's interesting. We programmatic all started with RTB, right? real-time buying was our thing. Mm-hmm. I think because everyone's gotten so busy, the optimizing or the focus on that has gone somewhat to the wayside. So again, leaning into and talking about blockchain platforms and stuff, is there something to be said for using blockchain for verifying things more real time and sort of
It's funny, it's interesting you mentioned that. There's a technology that's existed for quite a while, but it's becoming, it's getting improved. I think the cool thing about blockchain is that there's loads of really passionate people that work really hard on it. And the one thing that blockchain does better than anything else is iterate at a speed I've never seen relentlessly. So it's called, there's zero knowledge proofs, or they can be used as zero knowledge logins on some chains, but effectively you can use anything, your email address, it can be a phone number. It creates an account, so but it doesn't store the email, it doesn't store the phone number.
So all GDPR and CCPA
It has to have existed to create the transaction.
Okay.
And then, but then all you're able to see is the transaction. You don't see what happened to, but you know that that transaction can only have been created if there was an email address, if there was a phone number that was present before that. So you could, in effect, like target in a much, in a completely different way. It's deterministic, really, but you don't know who the person is. You just can then start to associate to a anonymous hexadecimal, well, yeah, alphanumeric, I should say, things that have happened and where that's been seen, but never know who the person is, but just like, hey, this person might like football and they might like living in London and they might, yeah, you know, they, yeah, yeah, we've seen them near the Emirates Stadium, like they could be an Arsenal supporter, to use myself as an example, you know, so like, yeah, but you would never know that it was me, you know, so like it gives you a much bit larger data set. There is the ability to send some value back. I think if anyone could ever crack that, we certainly haven't yet, but the ability to reward people for data. We've got some ideas for that.
That opens some interesting avenues for clean room sort of situations, yeah, where you're overlaying, you know, vaults of data from different data points. So whether it be a census, yeah, bureau or an Experian or banks or whatever, it's a little bit safer. But that would be tremendous for retention campaigns. And it's almost, it sounds a little bit like a remarketing opportunity 2.0.
Yeah. You know, I mean? And if you think that zero knowledge can go both ways. Yeah. So like there, you don't necessarily need the clean room per se. You just need to, yeah, have had the zero knowledge proof from Experian that this data existed about someone,
all the middlemen and sort of places where a bit's been taken.
You don't need that.
So this is, yeah. Okay.
There's obviously incentives to, like, obviously not, yeah, have this happen, but like there really is no need. And then I also think about like this idea of curation. Like I don't, I've spent a bit of time looking at curation, not as much time as I'd like to, but I think about it slightly differently, again, from like a blockchain background. I spent a lot of time in the trenches, as they say. There's particularly with the way that you trade certain tokens, there's this notion of automated market makers. So like, yeah, you have an amount of inventory multiplied by a price, which gives you equals a constant, which is like,
yeah,
by and large, the way that liquidity pools work to kind of give you a fair price for whatever a value of something is at a certain time. It could be Ethereum, could be Solana, could whatever token, enter your favorite token.
You're talking about better match rates, so to speak.
But then it's like, but you're like, then so like, if you applied that to like, let's say sports inventory, you would just have a stream of available sports inventory. So any one time in a snapshot of a bid, there'd be, okay, there's this amount, this was the last price we paid, that is then the constant, so it equals your price per 1,000 impressions that you have to bid to win the available inventory, regardless of cookies that are attached to it, content it is, it's like a fairer way of pricing it.
Yeah, there's still predicted outcomes, but a higher sort of rate of prediction. Is that sort of what we're saying?
It's not like, okay, I think I can see my user, so I'm going to bid slightly more, and then, but like, because the cookie like applies this like completely random coefficient to a bid at any one point, which like makes it impossible to forecast your average CPMs and floor prices. It makes it really challenging for you to buy inventory on a consistent basis in auctions. Like, well, we were competitive in the last transaction, but now we're not in this one, and it's because like, boom, this cookie's appeared, and terrible. It's like, okay, the, yep, bid's now $5. Like, it's just like, I don't know. And what does it really add in terms of performance? You know, like, it's difficult, yeah, to say, okay, I can see exactly that I bid $5 and like my click-through rate went up by like 0.15%. So like, yeah, was that worth it? I don't know. Like, do you know what I mean? It's still it's annoying that cookies didn't disappear, yeah, because I still like that coefficient, yeah, just like, do you really need it? Or is it just like,
yeah,
it's just, we're used to it. You know, it's kind of a crutch that we all lean on because we've had, yeah, it for 20 odd, yeah, years.
The boy who cried wolf.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us have gone so far down the without cookie route already that regardless of announcements 2 or 3 months ago from, you know, the powers that be, I think everyone is so far down the line now that actually you know, we've also realized things like Safari not having cookies and just Firefox and all the rest. We can't let one, even if they are the sort of market leader, we can't let one browser sort of dictate everything. And I think a lot of people are leaning into that. Now, curation in its theory.
Yeah, it's not about curation. Yeah.
Curation gives, you know, an agency back control to some extent. I find that I actually used to joke last year that last year was the year of mobile 2.0. We're calling it the year of curation because every week I think I got about 10 or 15 different emails, sort of cold call emails or LinkedIn messages. Hey, Matt, I'm doing curation. I want to have a chat. And it concerns me that there are a lot of players out there who we know were acting a little bit honestly about it. And I think they got, not from us, because maybe it was a bit of a blessing in disguise that we couldn't move as quickly as we wanted. So we didn't get burnt like I've heard some of my other sort of peers and stuff have been. But what we've sort of done is we've started curating, you know, our PMPs ourselves with strategic partners, and using, I think this is where it gets interesting, is using tools like, and let's give Alchemy a shout out, to sort of reduce the hops. And what I mean by hops is that between buyer and seller, really what it comes down to is it's, we're just trying to clean up the supply path. It's crazy because I think curation as it's being done at the moment is actually what we were calling in 2017, we were calling SPO, sort of that supply path optimization. Could I simplify it down to saying it's a cyclist? That's what some people may consider curation to be. And I think this is part of the problem is there's so many different definitions of what it is with different people. So, I mean, I think, yes, it is site listing, but then you've got to go one, maybe a layer deeper and start looking at your ad exchanges and SSPs as well. You're curating a site list, but are you getting it from the best sort of path?
Yeah.
You know? So I think one of the things in programmatic, like I alluded to, and I've said it a few times.
That's a good point.
There's a lot of steps. Let's take a well-known publisher, perhaps somebody like, I'm not sure what they are off the top of my head, but let's say The Telegraph. I don't know now, so I do apologize if I get this wrong, but I don't know how many SSPs they have plugged into their backend. So they might be a very solid domain to have on your curated whitelist, but have you taken the one step further and gone, well, actually, where are you getting that buy from? Is it through, you know, could it be Magnite? Is it PubMatic? Is it, and then on top of that, well, what data are we overlaying and how are we overlaying that data? Time of day, parting, all that sort of stuff. It's a lot. And I think that's the problem with curation sometimes, is that you can either be too simplified in it or go too complex. But I think there's still a lot to be looked into from that point.
Yeah, I think that's probably a perspective I've not had on it, is that you're buying inventory from multiple different sources. And I think predominantly through DSPs, right, which are then buying it through various SSPs. So the way you're coming at it from is like, you just want to understand, is it better? Because the DSP has relationships with SSPs that have different agreements on fees. So like, you just want the straightest shot to, for your example, the Telegraph sports section.
Taking me back again to what you're saying about managed versus self-serve. I mean, I think we might almost reach a point where we're hybrid old school IO buying with publishers. Like, you know, back in the day, we used to like do a direct buy, fax off an IO and sort of say, I want your homepage. They might get to a point where I think there will be platforms that talk to each other, agency side and publisher side, etc. Will it be a DSP as we know it now? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think that perhaps the buying or the execution of campaigns might actually be a little bit more sort of managed service with glorified dashboarding to some extent, or maybe even stronger dashboarding on agency side, mm-hmm. And tweak and being able to tweak and move things. You know, programmatic as it was meant to be, being able to do that multivariable testing and sort of dynamic optimization on the go. I think that's where we need to sort of like see ourselves trying to start go back to. And that's where blockchain will be incredibly important, because we're going to have to back up those things that we're saying and doing for
performance. Funny, as you were just talking about it then, it's like the process of buying ads programmatically really is exactly what you said. But then like, what actually happened was, is like people use different programmatic partners. So it was like you did your A/B testing on partners as opposed to A/B testing of ads in the respective platform that you were using. Yeah. Do you know, like it kind of took a bit meta. It kind of took one step back from where it actually should have been, which is just like fine. So that's right. But that fragmentation will do that for you. I think I've got a question for you, just because we kind of start rounding this out, but it's quite a big one. So if you were to rebuild programmatic advertising today, like what would you bring with you from the existing stack of technologies in your new garden of programmatic advertising that you're going to create?
Wow. Right. Now, this is where I overthink it. Are you talking from a point of view, if I had to bring one thing from an existing tech stack or a method or something like that? Is that what you're sort of saying?
You get the chance to create the garden of programmatic, and in that it can be whatever you want it to be. So I think like, what do you think is work? Like, let's make it a bit easier. What do you think is working really well that you'd bring with you to then like go forth and like create this new programmatic? What is the word I'm looking for?
The programmatic Eden.
Yes, exactly that. Yeah.
That's a bloody interesting question. I have to give it some serious thought, because I've got ideas bouncing around in my head. So, you know, the first thing that came up, I was thinking, you know, I wish we could bring back pixels and floodlights.
Yeah.
It's sort of a little bit more focused on them. But then I'm like, oh, but that means we're going to have to bring back, you know, sort of like the reliance on cookies. So then a part of me leans into, well, you know, perhaps I'd like to lean in a little bit more on the DSP side of things. But then that's, you know, defeating the whole opening the autonomy for publishers to get a little bit more sort of bang for their buck, mm-hmm. And which I think would actually kill off the fraud problem. I'm really not actually sure.
It's funny, isn't it?
What's your answer to that? I mean,
I think
not being
advised
in saying something blockchain.
I'd have just used blockchain. No, I think what I think is brilliant is, and people often overlook this, is that like, right now, across the world, there are millions of auctions taking place on websites, and that information is shared to some degree with the people that are hosting those auctions. You know, like that is no mean feat, the ability to host this like global ad auction for content that's available online and buyers can buy that. So like that auction mechanism, I think, is brilliant. I think I think pre-bid is a really efficient way to facilitate that auction taking place. So like, okay, you've got this really good universal adapter, which allows content just to plug in to this like source of monetization, and like an auction takes place. You know, like I wouldn't know if I'd necessarily bring an ad server, because really it'd just be like the highest bidder wins. Like, why not have a publisher just be a endpoint on their own content page? So it's like, we'll just compete in the auction that's taking place. It's probably going to win, but we'll compete. Mm. So it's just like, and then if then you're going to take that to like the nth degree, it's like, well, why not then also just like make the entire like content available to be bidded on? So like advertisers can buy once every four slots, whatever you make it. But then Journalist A gets credits, journalist B gets credits, journalist C gets credits, journalist D gets credits. They get to bid on the ad inventory as well. So like the entire system just becomes like a big auction for both content, paid for content, display ads, videos, you know, like just really take away all the crap and just like see, like we've got this awesome auction that facilitates value transfer online. Like, where can that go? And that is what I would take with me to the Garden of Programmatic. It's like the auction itself, because that is cool. It's still like, that doesn't happen when you, I don't know, I know kind of an example of a market. It's my cold that's giving me a bit of fog, but just like it's a really high speed transfer of value. If you can then, and I will give myself a shout out here, a blockchain then allows stuff to be paid for. Like there was this,
No, I hear you. I see exactly where you're going with this. Yeah.
I'll send you this link after the call, but there's in the early days of the internet, there was like, you know, you have like 401 and then you have 405. Yeah. There's an error. There's 402, which is like a payment to be sent over HTTPS.
Yeah.
There's a project called x402.org, which is looking at like rejuvenating this internet protocol. And they're working with Base, but like fundamentally they're going to, you can pay through an HTTPS, like no APIs, no subscription fees. That is going to be facilitated by stablecoins. So like that's something that we're researching, is that like you just pay for ads at the time using the internet as it already exists, with this brilliant auction mechanism. So yeah, there's some really cool shit going on in the blockchain world. I think people
see the return of fail whale 404.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's the 402 is like the old payments rails that used to exist, or still exist on the internet. And blockchains.
I mean, from a programmatic point of view, and this might be a whole another sort of call to actually go down, but that, so we've spoken very much web and programmatic sort of web buying there, right? And
yeah.
Yes, that now includes audio, video, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, we haven't even touched on how that may or could possibly work for what is kind of becoming an encompassing catch-all for anything that goes on the TV screen these days, CTV. I mean, you've got streaming, you've got SVOD, you've got BVOD, AVOD, all the different VODs. You want to talk fragmentation and getting the bids right, or getting the programmatic buying right for that. that if somebody could sort of just come along and tell everyone the best way to do that, I think they'd be very, very well thought of. It reminds me a bit of programmatic 2010, 2011, you know, where publishers were very, we're going to lose everything. So it was very fragmented from that point of view, and agencies didn't quite know the programmatic space yet. So from a display point of view, it's weird. It almost feels like we're going through that again now with broadcasters or the publishers, and you know,
it's tricky CTV because like the devices, the manufacturers of the hardware have a lot to say, and they don't. I guess they do to some degree.
They're selling advertising as well these days. You know, the OEM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Native platforms, but they don't talk to each other. And
No, it's interesting.
And that's all right, before you're plugging in Fire, Fire Sticks and Sky Boxes and all the rest. So anyway, yeah, we'll have to do a CTV discussion and
a follow up. Yeah. I'm going to brush up on it.
When you're cold, is sort of
pissing me off. Anyway, this has been an absolute pleasure, Matt. Thank you for going down the garden paths with me at some points. It's like one of my favorite things to do, but I think we covered some good stuff. I'd be more than happy to have you on again when I don't sound like I'm underwater.
I think you've done incredibly well today for somebody who's going through a flu. I mean, you picked a hell of a time of year to do it as well. I mean, everyone else gets the cold and flu during winter, but well done.
Tell me about it. I'm going to tell people up in the office, because I always say that there's someone that's made me ill. But I think it was my wife this time, so I let her off. Matt, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Cheers.
See you guys.
Bye-bye. Bye.